Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Brian Lloyd, Leslie Williams and Fionnuala Jones join us once again for Movies and Booze. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi guys.
To you all. I just can't wait to talk about the Robbie Williams monkey movie. But that'll come along later on. What wines we are going to cover?
Well, yes, because I've just come back from the States.
Oh,
and I was
nice.
Thinking Kamala Harris is from California, and I thought, you know, yeah.
That's
classics.
Does Donald Trump have a wine?
He did Trump wines.
He doesn't drink himself, though, obviously, you know.
No.
Eric looks after it.
But is wine the best wine ever? Everybody says so?
I've heard it's pretty terrible. Well, it's very oaked, kind of. It's from Virginia, they make it. You know, not the best country, but there are some decent wines from Virginia. But it's not, you know.
Yeah.
From reports that I've read, I haven't tasted it yet. It's not in Ireland, sadly. I don't know why.
Kamala doesn't have her own wine.
But she's from California, though.
What are the two Californians?
I have a Chardonnay, and I'm going to try and convince you all that you should try California Chardonnay. I know it may not work, but you should just give it one more go. It's a flavor we all adored. And then the second is Zinfandel, which is the quintessential Californian grape.
Yes, indeed.
I should explain more about.
Yeah, and the two movies today are not bad. Would it be fair enough to say that?
Yeah, well, Speak No Evil is great. I really enjoyed that.
Okay, yeah, everyone's saying that.
Yeah. The critic is, I mean, if you're really into that kind of lovey theatre in London in the 30s and Ian McKellen and witty, acerbic one-liners and all that kind of jazz, yeah, you're going to like it. Everything else outside of that, though, is a little bit meh, to be honest.
Okay, so it's a plot with that just gives Ian McKellen an excuse to be witty.
Correct.
Acerbic.
Correct.
Okay, well, that's not a bad thing.
You can live with that. No, that's you can live with that, yeah. That's enough of a reason to turn up to a cinema.
Yeah, and Speak No Evil, is that because of James McAvoy or the whole thing?
The whole thing, really. It's based on a Dutch film that, the ending, which I'm not going to give away, but you can look it up on Wikipedia. It is twisted how bad it is. And they didn't do it in the American UK remake, which is fine because there's no way I think, you know, Western mainstream audiences would be able to hack that ending.
Really?
And I'll tell you off air what it is.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't wait for you to tell me that. So the Emmys, who's going to win?
The Emmys are this Sunday, yes.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be a clean sweep for The Bear in the comedy categories.
Yes.
Again, we'll argue again about whether The Bear is a comedy.
Nope.
This is for
absolutely
the second
not.
Season.
100% not.
In terms of the drama categories, Shogun's probably going to clear up. It just cleaned up at the Creative Arts Emmys, got 14 wins there. It'll probably be the same here. In terms of the limited series categories, it's a bit more spread. Obviously, you had Baby Reindeer earlier this year, and that was a big talking point.
Mm.
I think that might win the overall limited series category. But in terms of the actors category, I think it might be shut out there for Richard Gadd. Jessica Gunning, I think, might win for Best Supporting Actress in a limited series. In terms of some of the other categories, you've Jodie Foster, I think, is pegged to win for True Detective Night Country
really?
For actress in a limited series, which is kind of gas. But it's because, I enjoyed the show. I don't know if it was that great, to be honest.
Yeah,
moments.
Yeah, it had its
moments.
It had its moments, but
it wasn't standout.
She was very good, but apparently it tends to go to big Hollywood-y types when they're nominated. You had the likes of, we'll say, Kate Winslet winning before, obviously from Mayor of Easttown for these. It's kind of nearly rewarded for everything else. The stature more than
Kevin
actually.
Costner, when he won for Hatfields and McCoys, the same thing as well. No one saw this show, but he won and it's cleaned up and it was really this? But,
yeah. So then in terms of obviously the best actor in a comedy, Jeremy Allen White for The Bear, Evan Moss Backrack will win probably Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy again, for The Bear.
Mm.
Hacks, I think, could get a good look in. I think the newest season is actually going to be on TG Carr, so keep an eye out for that. But they reckon Jean Smart will actually take Best Actress. And the other girl will take Best Supporting Actor. Her name escapes me now. This is happening Sunday, as I said. It's Eugene and Dan Levy hosting, so there'll probably be a bit of crack. Catherine O'Hara is supposed to be attending, so we'll maybe get a little Schitt's Creek reunion. They're teasing something about a big West Wing tribute / reunion because it's 25 years since.
Right.
Don't know what that's going to look like or what that's going to involve. And then country singer Jelly Roll is doing the in memoriam section. So
that's
I don't
where, like somebody sings a sad song and everybody goes, oh, look,
song.
They're dead.
Yeah, and we talk about all the people.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
So basically, it's going to be The Bear and it's going to be Shogun, I think.
Yeah. So Baby Reindeer will maybe win for series, but not for anything
else. I think
else,
it'll win for series and maybe Jessica Gunning might get lead actress. But in terms of lead actor, I actually think John Hamm will get it for Fargo. And I think that's kind of fair enough because he was very good and very scary in it. So
terrifying.
Does that mean the Emmys have become kind of predictable in that you can sit down there with utter confidence and tell us who's going to win everything? That's relieving us of the burden of having to watch it.
I think definitely, as I said, the comedy and the drama categories, I'm like, they're fairly sewn up. Everything else is kind of, because there were so many like limited series and they're all of kind of weird, varying quality, you wouldn't know if it's going to be a thing of we'll spread the wealth here in terms of awards, but I don't know.
That new series of Hacks, is that series two or three?
Three.
I think this is three that's coming to T.G. Carr.
I'm
absolutely open to correction on that, but what a coup for T.G. Carr getting that as well.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
They always do that though. Remember they had like The Wire and they had like Breaking Bad first. They're always like, whoever does their programming, they are so ahead of the curve on so much stuff.
A fella, somebody texted into the show earlier on and claimed Steve Guttenberg had a cameo in The Wire.
I don't know.
I've never seen
The Wire.
Seen a couple of times.
I'll watch it eventually, guys.
Well, in fairness, you were probably, you know.
I was a twinkle in someone's pocket at that point.
You were probably a post-Wire activity.
I don't stick out of my head. Like, I mean, are they just doing like a Police Academy joke? Is that what
maybe. I don't know. I don't get that. Right. Okay. So, biopics.
Yes.
Pharrell is going to be played by a piece of Lego.
Yeah, so I just thought this was kind of a bit of an interesting story as to, like, biopics are really difficult, I think, right? Because you either have someone, we talked about the Britney biopic a couple of weeks ago on the show where it was like, who do you cast as Britney? Because Britney is obviously iconic, mononymous, like, she's bigger than anything else. Like, whoever you cast as her, there's going to be constant comparisons about her looks and everything else like that. And, like, biopics are rarely very, very good. Like, the handful of excellent biopics you can probably name on one hand. So there's a couple of celebrities taking a different approach with it. So as you mentioned, Pharrell has a movie coming out, a biopic coming out in November. It's called Piece by Piece. It's not live action. It's using Lego. So the story of how he became a super music producer is told through Lego. And he is featured in it as a Lego character and people in his life are contributing their voices, but it's not live action, right? And
okay.
Then similarly...
So will it look like the Lego movie?
Essentially, like, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So... like, and by all accounts, it does seem to be getting, as I said, it's not out here till November and I haven't seen it. The reviews have been like good. People have said that it's kind of a bit scant on detail. It's also a PG rating. So it is kind of, it's like, it really feels like they're kind of pandering to children in a way. But I'm also like, what child knows who Pharrell Williams
who's gonna
is or
what
cares?
What child is going to care,
You know what I mean? Like, I really care.
So it's like a little piece of Lego with a huge hat. Kind of, smaller than the other bits of Lego.
Essentially, yeah. And like,
one mentions the hat.
I do get it because it'll be like fun and like with the music as well. I'm sure it'll be a visual treat. But I'm like, is that the best way to tell your story? And then there's also begs the question of like product placement and what kind of deal was done that it was like, let's do this in Lego and we'll pay you a bajillion euro. That's not confirmed or anything. That's purely just me speculating. But then you have people like Robbie Williams, and you mentioned at the top of the show, doing this Monkey Man biopic. So he has one coming out in December that's being previewed at film festivals at the minute called Better Man, in which it isn't an actor playing Robbie Williams. It's a CGI monkey. But apparently, again, the critics love it. They said it was like, it's such a gamble, but it paid off because it's weird and it just worked. Like, but again, I'm reading this and I'm like, I can't even fathom it. I think one of the reasons why they decided to do it was that obviously Robbie's super famous here and super famous in the UK, but in the US he is known but nowhere near to the degrees he is over this side of the Atlantic. So it was kind of to add another slant to get people to get bums in seats, essentially. But I just think we were talking about it off air as to why people would approach it this way, but I don't really get it. But you, Brian,
I know, I've watched that. No, I'm intrigued. I am absolutely intrigued.
You would be, absolutely.
Because,
yeah.
Like, as Fionnuala said, like, so many of these biopics, especially musical biopics, generally tend to be very, very generic and that it's almost bordering on hagiography. And there's no kind of awareness of themselves. There's no kind of interaction with their work and their experience. And, you know, you think of something like, you know, the Whitney Houston biopic with Naomi Aki recently enough, that was terrible. And even something like Hank Williams, like there was one with Tom Hiddleston, there was a Hank Williams biopic and it was okay, but like, you know, he's been dead years. You can drill down a bit here, you can get dark with it, and they don't do that at all. Having a monkey play Robbie Williams, I mean, that's so strange, sounds stupid, but my God, if it's something different than your boring you know, completely generic musical biopic, I'm in. You're already, sure. Why not? Like,
are there any even tantalizing details about? Is it like about a monkey that joins a boy band? Are the rest of the monkeys?
No,
the only monkey.
He's the only monkey, and it's the same kind of motion capture that they did for all of the Planet of the recent Planet of the
And
Games.
Does anyone mention the other one's a monkey?
No.
That I'm not sure, but I don't think so, because that would obviously take you out of it then.
Correct.
You know, like,
I assume it's a talking monkey.
It is a talking monkey.
And
singing
so
it follows.
Monkey.
But like, this is, again, this is the thing. That's so avant-garde. That's that's amazing. I love that. I'm like, everyone, like, no one is acknowledging the fact that it's a monkey. And to be fair as well, like, if you saw that documentary he did on Netflix, he's very, like, this is, Robbie Williams is one of these people that has no qualms about opening up and being horribly, horrifically vulnerable.
Yes.
And being very, like, it's, he is one, not one of these people that tries to protect himself when he should.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I wonder, was it his idea?
Yeah. Like, when you say it, probably like that. And I, like, as I said, it documents his growing up, working class background, the difficult relationship he had with his father, and how his father was trying to get credit for his success. And so I think maybe there was an element of that, that it was like, I need this separation from it, because maybe to see a human actually relive it all again would be too painful.
Okay.
Is it
maybe?
Maybe.
Oh gosh. So, but the father isn't a monkey in the film.
As far as I'm aware.
He's just a monkey.
As far as I'm aware, Robbie Williams is the only monkey in the film.
My word. But American audiences will be going to this and it won't do Robbie Williams' career any good. One would have thought. They'll think it's just a film about a monkey.
Well, he had that album. Remember, The Ego Has Landed, and that was going to be like his launch into America, and then it just, you know,
didn't
at all, like, fizzled out. Like,
when can us mortals get to see this?
So Better Man, I think, is slated for release here December 26th. Ooh, so Merry Christmas, everyone. Christmas present from Robbie Williams. And then the Pharrell Piece by Piece. I don't think there's a confirmed date, but it's November, I think.
Yeah.
So
don't care about Pharrell.
I want to see the monkey.
I want to see the monkey.
Yeah,
I totally want to see the monkey. Right. Tell us about our first wine today.
Okay, so I was in Kentucky visiting bourbon distilleries, and a very nice time I had. Lots of southern hospitality. Well, if you look at American wine list, this is your choice. It's California Chardonnay, or maybe a Pinot Gris or something. But this is Kendall Jackson, Jackson Family Wines, Vintners Reserve Chardonnay from O'Brien's. It's 30, so it's not cheap. They have another California at about 80.
Well, had to come a long way, I assume.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, California wines are notoriously really expensive, so this is quite good value. And it's really typical. It's all those sort of tropical fruits, but there's a lovely citrusy streak that runs right through it. And I don't know, can you cope, vanilla? Have a taste there.
I think it's nice.
And you see, with, say, like, rich seafood or with pasta or something like this, is going to be lovely, you know? And I think there's a reason that we put oak in Chardonnay. It's because in France, where the best Chardonnay grows, in Burgundy, that's what they always did. Like, it's not like, it wasn't done just to, you know, people thought, I want to make the best Chardonnay in California. And they're like, where do they make the best Chardonnay right now? Well, they make it in Burgundy. And what do they do? Well, they put it in new oak barrels. Okay, well, let's do that then. We'll get the barrels from France and we'll do the same. And that's what they did. And we got a little overexposed to oaky Chardonnays in the 90s because a lot of Australian stuff was being sent in that had been using oak chips, which wasn't real oak, or oak staves, which gives an impression of oak, but not the actual oak, whereas this has actually been fermented in the barrels, so it takes on the flavour. And I just think it's really, we should think about it again. You know, it's a really versatile wine. And look, people say, oh, I don't like Chardonnay. Well, you know, they're not complaining when they're drinking champagne, which is usually at least one part Chardonnay, if not all Chardonnay.
That's a good point.
And, you know, no one's going to turn down a bottle of decent Chablis, which is, of course, Chardonnay. I mean, admittedly, there's no oak in Chablis. Well, there isn't the good stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I just thought this was something to, look, you know,
very tropical.
Yeah, very tropical. Exactly.
Yeah. It's strong. I can smell it. Like, it's quite strong.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. No, yeah. It's not. It's not bad. I know it doesn't really taste like Chardonnay. which is what I like about it.
Yeah.
And so you were in Kentucky, though, California.
No, I was in. Yeah, so visiting bourbon distilleries. Kentucky Tourism paid for my trip.
A
Dutch friend of mine organized, and a Swedish friend of mine, who we all kind of chipped in organizing with different wineries. And I was in Lexington, Kentucky, visiting the Pierce Lyons Distillery there, which is an Irish-owned distillery. They own a brewery and a distillery, and they make in Pierce Lyons Distillery is there just behind Guinness's.
That's
So then we traced, you know, and that was interesting because he uses pot stills, whereas The other guys are all using column sills, which traditionally in Ireland we say are not good, but you know, you got to put the bourbon into brand new oak barrels, and it's usually at least 51% corn, sometimes 70% corn, and then they'll use a bit of wheat or a bit of rye or a bit of barley to, always a bit of barley. And they are creamy, they're sweet, but without being, and really complex. I was stunned by the quality, you know?
Yeah.
Especially brands like the Michters.
I mean, Jack Daniels is probably the one that people would know.
That's not bourbon.
How is that not a bourbon?
No, no. Well, it's a Tennessee whiskey, we would traditionally say. And also, the tradition in Tennessee is that you filter it through charcoal, which most of us would feel is unnecessary. Now, it's like Jack Daniels is nice. I don't always like it. But so bourbon, you literally put it straight into the barrel at about, there's different views on how at what strength, but there's limits and so on. But usually sort of 62 or so percent alcohol, and it can drop down, and then you might then cut a little bit when it comes out. But it's charred oak barrels, so you're always going to get that charred oak character with it. It's really complex. People will pay... When we tasted one that was $3,700.
Oh my word!
Yeah, but it has already, since they released it, and they released it last year, it's now selling for up to 20,000 in places.
What? Mother of God.
They love to collect things, the Americans. And
there's a specific definition of what a bourbon is.
Yeah,
and is a bourbon a variety of whiskey?
Yes. Yeah. So I'll try and run through it. 51% corn plus other grains. Now, you could go 70% corn, but you have to have a little bit of barley to make it ferment, or to get the enzymes working for the master ferment. And then you must put it into brand new charred oak barrels. And they can be French oak, or they can be American white oak, usually American white oak. And there's Chicopink and other oaks as well. And then you leave it for at least 6 years, I think, or at least 4 years is the minimum. But most would leave it for six. It doesn't age as long as, say, Scottish and Irish whiskey, which you might have come across of, you know, 20, 30 years old. You can get 23, 30 year old bourbons, but they're very rare because the fact that it's so hot there, and the heat basically, and then the cold in the winter, and then heat, and it means that the whiskeys mature much quicker, and you lose it basically. It's the angel share, as they call it.
I was going to say, there's a film, coach film, I think it was.
Yeah. It was incredibly hospitable. I mean, people taking us for 4 hour tours and feeding us, and you know, I mean, I said I was a journalist. I am, but you know, like, I might have been lying. But it was lovely. It was really, really pleasant. Okay. And also, Kentucky, can I say, if you go to Kentucky, you're only 2 hours from Nashville. It's like 2 hours from Indianapolis. Like, you're really right in the, you know, and you know. So
yeah.
Muhammad Ali's home, all that, don't forget.
Can I ask Leslie how I go about getting his job? Well, obviously, you work hard and suck up to the right people. That's like, as with any job. In fairness to Robbie Williams, says another listener, he's always up for a bit of crack. I remember the behind-the-scenes filming of Rock DJ video where he went down in his skeleton and blood suit to shop for a box of cigarettes. Gas, to be fair, says Rory. And somebody else texted in to say, I'm loving monkeys instead.
Yes.
Would you like to do the film or the good film first?
The film.
Okay, the film after this.
Oh, it's a disaster. He's so important. I know. What did you think? Last night.
Well, I told you, I raved.
But? I'm your most ardent supporter. It's irrelevant.
Mum. Well, I thought you were a touch too florid with your hands, you know. And you pushed a bit. A bit too hard at times. But you looked striking. And you were very audible. I mean, every syllable clear as a bell.
Damning with faint praise there. That's The Critic. It's in cinemas today. So a very English movie.
Yes.
You say.
Yeah. And even the distributors of the film are called True Brit Entertainment.
Oh, right. So okay.
So what's going on? This is, it's set in 30s pre-war London. Ian McKellen is a theatre critic for the Daily Record, which is this, you know, broadsheet of some repute. He is made redundant by the new owner, played by Mark Strong. He's given his kind of his notice. He comes up with this elaborate scheme to essentially blackmail the owner by putting this actress, played by Gemma Arterton, who you heard there, putting the two of them together and essentially, you know, having compromising material on the owner to affect getting his job back and getting his redundancy kind of squashed, which I can empathise with, you know,
okay,
definitely. Right. I mean, I wish I came up with that.
Yeah.
But in the case of like Ian McKellen, it's all about the fact that, you know, he's very acerbic, you know, he doesn't care what people think, and, you know, he just seems to enjoy drilling down on Gemma Arterton's character and how terrible she is. Like, you know, he calls her fat in one review. He calls her emaciated in another review. He calls her ungainly in one review. He calls her, you know, removed in another review and stuff like that. And all while this is happening, there's a whole sort of subplot about, you know, the newspaper itself has come under new ownership, and there's kind of a whisper of, oh, you know, maybe the new owner is possibly a fascist, because that was a real thing, of course, as you know, with Lord Rothermere and the Daily Mail. And then on top of that as well, there's a murder mystery involved because one of the cast turns up dead and you're kind of wondering who actually was involved in it. What I would say about it is that, you know, Ian McKellen is brilliant in it, as you would expect. 83 years of age, the fact that he's able to command the screen and command a film like this gives you a length of his talent. But everyone else is just kind of left in the shadow. Like, no one else, no other character is as well developed as he is in this. Even with a, you know, great cast, like I said, Mark Strong is in there, Leslie Manville, who you heard there, Amala Garai, Ben Barnes. You know, they're all kind of left just with table scraps, really, because he is just chewing the scenery at all times. And that's what you want. Like, I mean, that's what you want from Ian McKellen when he's not, you know, playing Gandalf or whatever. You want him to be this really kind of catty and, you know, witty and, you know, caustic kind of
person. The way people imagine that he's like in real life.
Exactly, yeah. You see him on Graham Norton, like, and he's so kind of quick-witted and all the rest of it. You think he's like that. And then this, it's just taken to a sort of logical conclusion. It looks great. I mean, it's very glossily shot and all the rest of it. It has, you know, the Art Deco and that really kind of gilded, you know, look to it. It's kind of got a dreamy sort of haze. But the script is, it's just not there. And it's directed, or sorry, it's written by, I think it's Patrick Harbour is his name. He was, if you remember The Day Today, remember Dermot remember Dermot O'Hanrahan?
Yeah.
You know, 30%.
Yeah.
Him, he wrote this. And he also wrote another film called Notes on a Scandal with Judi Dench and Cate Blanchett. So he's known for taking on sort of like lurid stories of, like, you know, tabloid excess and turning them into, you know, engaging kind of thrillers. It's good. It's not great. I would say, you know, unless you are really, really into theatre and people do love theatre, I would probably wait for this on streaming or something like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Is there a difficulty, though, with him in it? And it's
he soaks up all the oxygen. Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
but even if you're directing or producing or writing that movie, you kind of know beloved, you know, figure in, and therefore you can't not give him all the room or most of the room.
No, you couldn't. And to be fair, I would imagine as a writer, you hear his voice, that's got to be so easy to write.
Yeah,
you can just put that all together. And for a director as well, it's like, just stick the camera on and let him roll. The problem with that is that as great and all as he is, it's not enough to sustain a film. You have to have a reason. You have to have him interact with other people. And those people, their stakes are just as valid as his are.
Mm.
And that doesn't happen in this. Like, you look at something like, I don't know, Gods and Monsters or something like that, where he is interacting with a great cast, or even, like, you know, the obvious one, Lord of the Rings. Like, everyone in that film is firing on all cylinders, like Viggo Mortensen and Elijah Wood and all of them. They're all there. Christopher Lee, like, you know, he's sparring with them and it's brilliant. But in this, it's just him on his own and everyone else is just kind of shades and kind of, you know, cardboard cutouts of characters.
Yeah. So. Is it a piece of froth, or does it have anything to say?
No, not really, no. Yeah, like, I mean, okay. It's sort of talking about, like, you know, the luridness and the seediness of London theatre, even though it's elevated to this kind of high stature and everything, you know. And it kind of makes the point of, like, you know, critics are all just, you know, angry, you know, narcissists who just take their own problems out on the people that are making stuff, which... fair enough. That's, you know, people can say that. I mean, it's been said many, many times. Like, Birdman does it very well. I think, you know, there's that great scene when Michael Keaton just lays into this person. It's like, you're risking nothing by saying this. There's nothing about form. There's nothing about technique. Like, that's valid. That's a valid, you know, bit. In this, though, it's just like, oh, he's a bit catty and he's a bit mean, and oh, he, like, you know, uses his pen like a sword. And it's like, yeah, all right, come on, say something else. Like,
yeah, he's... okay. All right. I know what you're saying. I see what you're saying there. Right. So how many people now are going to vote that weren't going to vote before because of Taylor Swift?
Okay. Well, I don't think we know that number yet. But in terms of how many people have visited vote.gov over in the States after Taylor Swift publicly endorsed Kamala Harris on Instagram. So I think it was over 400,000 users that day. And they usually get like 30,000 visits per day. Now, if you're to compare it to last year in 2023, she did a similar thing on Instagram where she was like, make sure you get out and vote, etc., and put up a link. And again, that had a huge amount of traffic to that link on the day. But in terms of people who actually registered to vote, it translated to 35,000 people. And then 50,000 people were able to verify their registration status. So like whether they knew whether they were registered to vote or not. So like not an insignificant number. And also when you consider how, and we talk about this nearly every week at this point, how much more famous Taylor Swift is getting every second. Like she's even more famous this year than she was last year. I would say when we do get the numbers, I'd say it will actually be higher than probably 30,000 in terms of people registering and going out to vote in this election.
Yeah, well. I wonder why she waited until after the debate before she...
No, okay, I have some of my own theory. I actually didn't think she was going to come out and endorse anyone because of the Vienna situation, which we talked about last week as well. There's a lot of speculation that she might have come out this time around because she's very good friends with Brittany Mahomes through Travis Kelce. She is married to one of the other football players who is a Mahomes. Cannot remember his first name. Doesn't really matter. She had been seen liking some Trump stuff. And obviously Swifties see this because Swifties see everything. They were not happy. They were very cross. They were then spotted at the US Open together and they were obviously huggy, pally, whatever, because they're friends. People kind of thought she came out with the official endorsement then to actually take the heat off that situation.
Oh,
now again, that's a very cynical look at things. Maybe that I like was it in her back pocket the whole time? Probably, because she has been very like, I want to be on the right side of history and I want to speak out on politics and stuff like that, and had obviously previously endorsed Biden and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But if you were to be very cynical, that's the way some people are looking at it.
Yeah. Would she have any Trumpy fans?
Well, I would imagine. I would imagine so.
By the law of numbers.
Her ubiquitous.
Her ubiquity is that much. You would have to imagine Trump people like her. Because everyone likes her.
Well, and this was the thing, the whole him of him using the AI generated images of her to endorse him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there are 100%. Maybe they're not as vocal, or maybe they are as vocal. I don't know. But yeah, they exist 100%.
Yeah. I wonder, will that damage her? Or will those...
endorsing Kamala?
Yeah.
No, definitely.
No. She's too power. She's too... Like I think the people that already don't like her for whatever reason, for... not speaking on Palestine, the private jets of it all, like they do other reasons, less more trivial reasons, they don't like her, so this won't affect them at all. Like the people who do like her were begging for this essentially. So
yeah,
and Kamala's team, I'd say, were also begging for it behind the scenes.
Yeah,
because
so then again, yeah, they sound like big numbers, but probably given the millions upon millions who vote in presidential elections in the US, you'd wonder how much of a difference
that's impossible to calculate. I'm saying, like, obviously 30,000 isn't a small number, but at the same time, in the grand scheme of things, and when you consider how influential she is, you'd kind of think it would be
higher.
There is also, like, obviously a lot of her fan base are still, like, probably not old enough to vote. Respectfully, I don't think that's the truth. Like,
yeah. I mean, it'd get you a handy quota if it was here.
Yeah.
I wonder what she... Yeah, when we have our general election, will Taylor Swift support anyone? I look forward to hearing about that. And Wicked Part 2, they've changed the release date? Why have they done that?
I think people do not realise that Wicked... The first part of Wicked is coming out this November.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't think people realise that that movie is split in two. So just,
I'm
prefacing this to you all now. When you go and it ends on a cliffhanger, quote unquote... Don't be shocked, because like it's a 3-hour musical. They've had to split it in two. So they've basically brought the second part forward. So it's now going to come out on November 21st, 2025, as opposed to November 26th, 2025. I think it's to stop it competing against another film. They did the same thing this year, I think, with because Moana 2 was coming out around the same time. So they were jigging it around to make sure they didn't compete, obviously. And then Wicked Part 1, for anyone that doesn't remember, coming out November 22nd, the same day as Gladiator 2. And they are very much banking on people doing
a Barbenheimer
on it. Yeah, where
they're
it's like...
It glicked.
Glicked, yeah.
Not as catchy.
It's not as big. But they want people in the green makeup and the Roman get-up.
I'd say everyone's going to avoid the Robbie Williams Monkey movie when that comes out on Stevens' Day.
Yeah.
That's, nothing else will come out that day. Leslie, tell us what this is.
So we have Segacio Family Vineyards Zinfandel. And Zinfandel is kind of the quintessential American grape. If there's anyone out there thinking this is a red wine, because you can get white Zinfandel.
Okay.
That all happened.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's what, which is pink. That happened when a bloke had a stuck fermentation. The grape stopped fermenting. So he was left with a sugary pink wine. And he thought, what am I going to do with this? So he put in a pretty bottle and called it White Zinfandel, and basically a whole new genre of wine took off. And that's generally sort of sweet and not very nice. This is much, much more interesting. Segacio, one of the best producers in the whole of California for this grape, from Sonoma County. So that's the bit to the west of Napa, and it's got quite cool climate elements. Fog blows in, keeps the grapes nice and cool. And it's just packed with sort of cherries and plums and a little more expensive. It's 40 or so, 41. I got this in the Corkscrew before I came in. But that's actually not bad for California wine. I mean, the Ridge version is even more expensive and, you know, could be just, arguably is interesting. Just, you know, but Segacio's top wines cost even more than this. But they're really good. I mean, they're just really consistent. I've never had a bad Segacio. And I just love all those sort of cherry, blackcurrant, blackberry fruit flavors.
It's delicious. That's grown-up's wine.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what that is.
So independent wine shops. I think McHugh's have it as well. In a few places.
Okay, yeah, lovely. Yeah, right. And so it's Zinfandel. Say the name of the...
Segacio. Segacio. Segacio.
Okay, nice.
2021.
Happy Gilmore 2 is in production. Is this because he has his contract with Netflix and he's just... eventually we will have a film about monkey tennis because he's run out of ideas.
Maybe. But you know what? I love Happy Gilmore, so I'm kind of like, fair enough. Let Adam Sandler.
Come on.
And I also like, enough time has passed. Like, the first one came out in 1996. You know what I mean? And like, I haven't seen, I know Olivia reviewed the Beetlejuice last week. I still haven't seen it. But like, by all accounts, like, solid
people are liking it.
Sequel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, if Beetlejuice can do it, let Happy Gilmore do it. But anyway, it's in production. Adam Sandler is obviously back. Kyle Nowacek is directing. He did the recent Adam Sandler Netflix comedy Murder Mystery. And in terms of other people coming back, we have Julie Bowen, who was the love interest in the first film. And also Christopher McDonald was obviously Shooter McGavin, is also confirmed coming back. Joining the cast then, we have Bad Bunny, who people will know, singer, rapper. Very big deal. Not really sure how much he can act. He's been in a couple of things. I think he was in Bullet Train. But he seems to be like very much doubling down on the I want to become an actor and I'm investing my time in acting. So no idea about his character. No idea about plot details. They're keeping it very under wraps. But it is in production and will be coming to Netflix soonish, I would imagine. Next year, maybe. Yeah.
It's an interesting one because it would justify a theatrical release.
Yeah, maybe there will be a little... Well, no.
No, I wouldn't.
I mean, not in terms of like on the Oscar goes too. But
no,
I mean, people would go to the cinema to see it.
Oh, no, I would. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah. But like, he's made this deal now with Netflix. It's like, I think it was like the original deal, if I recall, was like he had to do 6 films.
Mm.
And he did them all and then they like obviously re-upped them for another 6 or whatever it is. But... like, I mean, look at like Beverly Hills Cop Axel F, for example. Like, I mean, that just came and went like a fart in the wind.
Yeah.
Like, anyway, so like, they can have these like, you know, big legacy sequels that people have been hounding people for years. And then they're on Netflix and everyone watches it on the first weekend and the second weekend. But then after that, then it just goes into the churn of the algorithm and then you'll see it again in 6 months' time. You're like, oh yeah, remember
but
that.
Maybe they will do like a week's release or something. Will you know the way they do that sometimes?
Maybe.
Again, you look at Beetlejuice and how much money that's making and how well that's doing.
And now it's going... It's going streaming very soon,
isn't it?
Yeah, in October.
That's crazy.
It's making money. This is the thing. Beetlejuice is making money. So this idea of putting it to stream, and which means it's going to be on the dodgy box, essentially.
Yeah.
Is crazy talk. It is. No,
which means...
No, when you hear it, it's like a tone for premium ownership, it's like, yeah, that'll be on the dodgy box. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't...
I'm not condoning piracy.
We don't condone that, by the way.
Yeah.
Anyway, shape or form. Anyway, our second movie to talk about is Speak No Evil. It's in cinemas today. Here's a clip.
Oh, it's a disaster. He's so important.
I know. What did you think last night?
Well, I told you, I raved.
But?
I'm your most ardent supporter. It's irrelevant.
Mum.
Well, I thought you were a touch too florid with your hands, you know. And you pushed a bit. A bit too hard at times. But you looked striking. And... you were very audible. I mean, every syllable
clear as a bell.
Sorry about that. You may have, the more eagle-eared among you may have spotted that was somewhat similar to the critic, because that's what it was. Right, so Speak No Evil is a bit scarier than that.
Way
that
scarier.
Clip we've just heard.
Yes.
So it's Big Scary House type scenario?
Not necessarily, actually. So it's more kind of about sort of bourgeois social mores. So essentially these couple meet on holidays. The couple says, look, listen, whenever you're back in London, come to our country estate in the West Country in Devon. You'll have a great time. You'll love it. The other couple, played by Scoot McNairy and Mackenzie Davis, are this American couple. Their marriage is kind of on the rocks. They have a child that has a lot of anxiety. And they're thinking, OK, a weekend in the country will be the perfect thing for us. And when they get there, initially, you know, the couple, and it's played by James McAvoy and Irish actress Aisling Franzosi, they're that sort of like, I don't know if this is the correct term to use, but kind of crusty, you know, like okay. Very kind of like, you know, like artistic, and they live in the country and, you know, they're driving around a banger of a Subaru and all the rest of it. But they're authentic, you know,
right,
kind
okay.
of way like. And
yes, they have a pet dog on the string.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. All yeah
that
okay.
Kind of stuff. Like, right, you know, yeah. like it's very kind of like quaint, I guess, would be another way of putting it. And initially they're kind of thinking, right, well, you know, they live out and they're a little bit unvarnished, but, you know, they mean well. But then little by little, you see that they're actually quite sinister, and there's actually something a little bit unhinged about the way that they treat their child. And their child, it's revealed that he has this genetic thing called, I forget, the aplasia, but essentially like his tongue is too small, so he's not able to speak.
Mm.
But as you go along, you realise that actually, no, there's a reason for that, and there's a reason for why they are so unsettling. I mean, you can look at the trailer and you'll figure it out, that it turns out that James McAvoy is actually completely unhinged. And I would say, you know, it's a great role for him, because he can play really charming very, very well. He can play that really kind of like verbose, and, you know, you can understand the sort of the magnetism, but then at the same time, you can just turn on a hat and he's terrifying, and it's like he's in Split, and, you know, he has that ability to just pivot straight away. And Aisling Franzosi as well, like, she was in this great film called The Nightingale. And she's able to play like sort of cowed and vulnerable, but with this real kind of, you know, iron core of grit underneath it. And Scoot McNairy and Mackenzie Davis, I mean, Mackenzie Davis gives one of the most terrified looks. That's a really difficult thing for actress to do. Like, she looks genuinely terrified in this film. Like, her eyes are just like caught in headlights, you know, that sort of way. And Scoot McNairy is very sort of nebbish and, you know, weak-chinned, and he's like, oh, I don't know if we want to. And again, the film plays on that idea. It's kind of like what happens in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo at the very end of it, when Stellan Skarsgård has Daniel Craig all strung up, and he's all like, why is it that the fear of embarrassment is stronger than actual fear? You know, it's like you knew that something was wrong, but you came willingly because you didn't want to offend. And that's really what this film is about, you know? I was talking about the original Danish film. It's absolutely twisted. They don't go that far in it in this, but it is pretty full on. Like, there's a lot of kind of like psychological horror in this. But yeah, it's great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So, but it's not jump scares. It's more.
It's just more like it's squeamish and it's awkward, and then it turns into, oh my god, they're actually
doing
chasing us around
things.
The place with like an axe and shotgun, and they're trying to kill everyone. And then it turns into something like Straw Dogs.
Yeah.
Now do you know what I'm trying to get?
Yeah. No, indeed. Wholesome family entertainment. We heartily recommend it. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Fionnuala and Leslie and Brian.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.